recorded in Zoom. Well, hello again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the journal that brings you Memphis stories, ideas, connections, and community in one place. And I am Mark Fleischer, publisher of Storyboard Memphis, and your host for the next 30 minutes of Storyboard 30. My guest today is someone that many of you are already familiar with, and you may know his voice. He is host of his own podcast, Champions of the Lost Causes, volunteers twice a year for WKNO during their pledge drives, quite involved with the Coliseum Coalition as one of its founders, which of course is dedicated to bringing the Mid-South Coliseum back to life. We are talking about Marvin Stockwell. Marvin is also director of media relations at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Marvin is here to talk about a few things. One of the things we were kind of prepping for the show here, we were talking about the really immediate changes due to the pandemic. And some of the changes, of course, revolved around public relations. And Marvin, as the director of media relations at St. Jude, and with some of his past experience, including his experience after Katrina, Hurricane Katrina,
yeah.
We'll talk about how we have had to readjust public relations in this crazy pandemic world that we're living in. Marvin Stockwell, welcome to Storyboard 30.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. Glad to be back.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about this, but I want to first ask you how you are doing. We were talking about how we were, you know, suddenly needing gobs of sleep, you know, so how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, and my family's doing well, so thanks for asking. But yeah, one of the things that during that first week where we all were readjusting our priorities, and in that space, major conferences that I'd been planning to go to were canceled, along with all the work product that went along with that. So like suddenly I found myself with almost, you know, many lines of work just completely canceled. And in that kind of like between period, there were some things to do for sure, but we were all kind of saying, what is this new world we're in, and what's the media landscape going to look like, and how do we in public relations need to respond? And so there was this couple of days where there wasn't as much to do as normal. And I found myself sleeping for 11 hours plus two nights in the same week. And I never do that. And you have, I just had to realize that, like, obviously I had needed to catch up on my sleep. And I just, I didn't realize it. We were running and gunning and trying so hard on different fronts as professionals and as parents and as people active in, you know, community projects, et cetera. And I just didn't realize how tired I was, you know. So
speaking of children, you know, you've got kids.
Yeah.
You've got school age kids, right? So how has that been going with, teaching them, you know, homeschooling them at this point?
It's really, yeah, I know it's been, that has been part of what's fascinating about this. And our kids are 16, 13, and 9. Mm-hmm. And Sarah and I are very fortunate that they're all smart kids. And there was a recalibration for each one of them as well. As they adjusted and their schools adjusted all on the fly. I'm happy to report that this far into it, they've settled into a new rhythm, and they're getting their homework done and keeping up with their mini Zoom calls, as we've now, you know, like migrated most of our lives on the Zoom calls, on the Zoom call. But they're doing well. I appreciate you asking. The challenge of competing for bandwidth in the household, because Sarah's my wife Sarah is working, she worked for Crosstown High, and she is also living on Zoom. So our kids are online and we're online, and sometimes it's like, why won't that file attach to this email? You know, it's because four other human beings are using the internet.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting. And our information services team at St. Jude has had to like really shift gears and put some technological things in place to better support this major shift in the St. Jude workforce, mm-hmm. working from home. And I know my colleagues at ALSAC are in the same boat. It's been a big shift for St. Jude. It's been a shift in my public relations priorities in my role at St. Jude. Just adjusting to the new media landscape and knowing what is the right thing to say and what messages and what relevant work is St. Jude doing that is good for us to get out there. And some of those messages are literally new initiatives, new things that St. Jude is doing because of the pandemic. So that's been really an interesting thing to say, to think you're heading towards one thing, a bunch of conferences and the associated work, and you think you're going to be working to publicize certain things. And then you're like, what? Nope, that's canceled. Whoa, what's the new play? I mean, it's a giant broken play.
Yeah.
We're running, but it's been fun to run that.
Yeah. Well, you know, when this whole thing started, and as you know, the landscape has been shifting almost daily, right?
Right.
You know, especially early on, it was shifting daily. Public relations, messaging, communications, suddenly that all, you're like you said, that all changed. And, you know, a lot of the work you do, and I'm talking about not just St. Jude, but also outside of that, is in the nonprofit sector. And suddenly, you know, in the nonprofit world, you're asking yourselves, how relevant are we right now? You know, how relevant is this? And as a result, what kind of messaging do we put out? And do we put out any messaging at all, you know?
Yeah. That's what some nonprofits are facing and having to like, if your mission and work doesn't line up with direct service, it's a more challenging fundraising environment. So, you know, if you're fundraising for the arts, I'm sure that mirrors what we experienced when I was at Church Health post Katrina, in that Church Health fared well in the fundraising and messaging atmosphere during the Katrina response. You know, we had north of 10,000 people up from New Orleans, and Church Health provided care to the people who were uninsured. And so we had to mount a massive effort. Dr. Scott Morris led the subcommittee for healthcare, I remember at the time. So it was heady times at Church Health, and our fundraising message still resonated because people realized we were on the front lines caring for all these extra people. But I remember at the time, and I would bet that the same thing holds true, that if you're fundraising for things that aren't direct service, it's challenging. On the St. Jude side, it literally has, it's been quite frankly amazing to watch an organization as large as we are be nimble enough to pivot and offer. I'll just reference two things that are of substantive help to the world, but also useful things in the hands of a public relations professional. One, first thing we were able to really say to the world or really kind of promote was that our psychology department and two people in our psychology department and a child life staffer and an illustrator teamed up to produce out of nowhere, I mean, nothing flat, a coronavirus coloring book for kids ages 5 to 9. And they originally started with our patients in mind, but then they quickly thought, well, gosh, any little child in the world could benefit from this. So they tweaked the content and made it available for download for free worldwide, and it's now been translated into, I think it's more than a dozen languages. So, and they've since produced a tween resources that's a little bit more advanced for that age, and then a teen resource just came out. So that's been a real joy to be able to publicize, because you know that my work as a communicator is helping real people work through real fears that literally everyone on earth is experiencing on some level. And you know, that's one of the things, back to how, you know, the pandemic, there are not too many things with as horrible as the pandemic has been, and you lament the death and the suffering and the damage to our economies, but there are not too many things that get the entire world's attention. And to be able to operate within that and know that St. Jude is offering something that is a help to so many people, and I'm able to kind of like get that out more broadly, was really an unbelievably satisfying thing to be able to do as a PR guy. Now the rest of the stuff, our St. Jude Global Office is standing up a COVID-19 observatory and registry for childhood cancer. So literally, St. Jude is leading the global conversation about how is COVID-19 affecting children with cancer. And we're connected with oncologists and hematologists and pediatricians and nurses and everything from all over the world, and aggregating this data so that we can, and doctors who are in countries where the virus peaked first are advising doctors in countries that where the virus has not quite peaked. So the lessons learned that are being passed through that channel is just invaluable for so many. And that's been a really gratifying thing to be able to pitch to media as well. And we've gotten great traction.
Yeah. Back to the coloring book for just a second. That was something that was in the works before the pandemic, correct?
No, it's literally something we said. Maybe earlier on in the pandemic when, you know, also does have world-renowned virologists. So like it was on our radar before it was on a lot of people's radar. But that was something in real time. They said, we ought to flex and do that. And now what wasn't new, and the reason that was a quick pathway to travel down, is that our psychology department and our child life staffers and illustrators have worked together before to produce resources to, say, walk a child through a cancer diagnosis. Uh-huh. Again, it's where the developmental ability of a child ages 5 to 9 in experiencing and expressing themselves through coloring and engaging in a fun activity tees up a conversation with a trusted adult about something that they've got to talk to that might cause anxiety. Mm-hmm. So we already had expertise in that. So, and we already had the relationships in place. So when all of a sudden we were facing the first global pandemic in the internet age, St. Jude was well equipped to be nimble and flexible in delivering on its mission in a new way.
Yeah. Yeah. Now on the public relations side, you know, St. Jude is certainly no stranger to appropriate and effective public relations, also happening to have a rather incredible message.
Right.
Right.
And many incredible messages within, in a way that I didn't even appreciate before I worked there, quite frankly.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But even with that said, you know, St. Jude, as we were talking about a little bit before, you know, before the show started, you know, even St. Jude had its struggles a little bit with what is our messaging as this pandemic stretches, or as this plays out, what is our messaging look like?
It's an unprecedented situation.
Unprecedented situation, exactly. Yeah.
So there literally was no precedent. And so there was... So we, like every human on earth, we had to say, what is this new thing, and what's the responsible way to react? You know, there's a thing that they teach you in crisis PR. You know, if your company, if you're the PR guy for BP oil and you have an oil spill, you know, the question that you should confront yourself with right off the bat is, what would a reasonable person expect a responsible organization to do in a situation like this? Now, while this was not a St. Jude crisis, it's a global crisis that everyone was responding to, but I think the same rule applies. What would a reasonable person expect a responsible organization, how would they expect that organization to react and comport itself in an environment like that? And I think that is what we took a second, more than a second, and it was wise to take. Dr. James Downing, our CEO, has done an excellent job in leading us through this. Is we said, what does the world need from St. Jude and how should we respond? So previous experience had led us to have a incident command center procedure in place, that was enacted. And little by little, you know, the first thing that we were able to get out there was the coloring book. And then in time, the COVID-19 registry. And then later on, you know, more infectious disease centric stuff, we were able to respond to media requests. But yeah, it's just, we all needed to take time to say, what's the right thing to do here? And then do it.
Yeah. Now, speaking of all that, you're teaching a couple of classes coming up here in the next few weeks, toward the end of May 19th and 26th. Through your work with Momentum Nonprofit Partners, the classes are called Publicity 101 Pandemic and Beyond, a free 1-hour webinar on effective nonprofit public strategies will be offered twice. Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to mention that because, you know, these obviously are very timely courses.
Yeah.
Based on the very topic we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Right.
How do we make these adjustments during the pandemic? And what does our media strategy look like? How do we remain relevant, you know? But also continuing to put the word out about your specific nonprofit, right? So talk about how the classes came about.
You've
talked about versions of these before.
Yeah, years ago, I used to teach a Publicity 101 class through the University of Memphis. And there was some budgetary thing that happened at the U of M. They eliminated what they called short courses through continuing ed. And I taught it through a startup for a minute, and then I just got busy doing other things. But yeah, I taught a version of this class 2009 to 2013, and it's kind of been in the back of my mind. And when I saw Momentum Nonprofit Partners, and you know, and I've known Kevin Dean for years, and I really think that Momentum is doing really great stuff. Like I think, you know, the rebranding and recasting and rebuilding of that nonprofit. And its mission, its retooled mission, I've been really impressed with. And so I've been thinking about this for a while and talking to Kevin Dean. And so we had already really agreed on teaching a Publicity 101 class anyway. We've kind of had that as a working idea, even on the books for a couple of months before the pandemic. But it was envisioned as an in-person class at Momentum Nonprofit Partners on Cooper. And then we quickly realized, okay, well, we got to take this class online.
Yeah.
And gosh, it would be tone deaf to not respond to the most obvious overarching thing that's on everyone's mind is how do we do publicity in this context? So we came up with a catchy, like, additional piece of the title. But truth be told, a lot of the class will be about tactics that I would have talked about anyway. But I'm going to keep the class really lean on lecture, and not, this will not be some comprehensive publicity class. This will be a fairly quick orientation to the content map, if you will, that using the PESO model, paid, earned, shared, and owned, which is the kind of modern way of looking at how communications kind of knit together, you know, social media, blogs, earned media, you know, purchased media, ads. So I'll orient people to that, but then I really want to, as quickly as possible, get into situational questions. Mm-hmm. Because yes, I have learned a good bit by doing public relations in this new environment myself. But I know that I will learn myself by hearing the experiences of others. And I look forward to kind of like walking through those things and kind of thinking on my feet. That's one of the things I love most about doing public relations is I enjoy teaching, coaching and doing and figuring out what's the best way. How can public relations best serve the mission and work of nonprofits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of all that, you know, in thinking about talking with you again, you know, I think of you, you're one of my counterparts in town, I'll say, because you're one of those guys that, just like myself, I can't stop the wheels turning. I'm always thinking about, you know,
yeah,
how can I help here? How can I help there?
Guilty as charged. Yeah.
And then also have the difficulty saying, no, I can't do that.
That's in the club. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you also have a podcast.
Yeah.
And I love the name of the podcast. It's for the OIM network. And it's called Champions of the Lost Causes. So I had the pleasure of being on your show a few.
Yeah, that's right. That was a great interview. I enjoyed that so much. And I got great response from people when I pushed it out in social media. So that was a really interesting interview. Yeah.
Thank you for having me on. You know, but I want to talk about that because the Champions of Lost Causes, it really fits the whole everything that you do, all the work that you do, not with, you know, as we said before, not just with St. Jude, but also Coliseum Coalition.
Yeah.
And it seems like you borrowed the concept of lost causes in referencing your work with the Coliseum, I would think, a little bit.
That is definitely where the name kind of came from. I started to ruminate on when I passed the 4-year mark, and now the Coliseum Coalition's been on the scene working to reopen the Mid-South Coliseum for 5+ years now. But when I reached the 4-year mark, I thought, I've been at this 4 years. And when you cross the 4-year mark, you go, I must really love this. Like, what am I, let me take a step back. What am I getting out of this? What's driving this? And you know, I have a degree in journalism and journalists are curious by nature. So I started to get very curious about what makes a group of people steadfastly stick with something for so long. And I got interested in the phenomenon of causes and cause-based work. And I thought, you know, really the Coliseum Coalition board and related folks that help with this or that are, you know, not too dissimilar from a regular workplace work team, but of course they're different in a lot of ways too. You know, there's no hiring process. There's no job description. There's no job posting. There's no application process. People just kind of find their way into cause-based work. There's no pay. There is people promote themselves, demote themselves, hire and fire themselves, all in one big fluid motion that I think gives people working on causes a nimbleness and a dexterity in dealing with those they deal with that really benefits them. You know, the Coliseum Coalition has become an official 501c3 nonprofit. Not all cause-based work does, but a lot do. So it really... cause-based work is a subset of nonprofit PR, really. You know, so my nonprofit PR mind thinks about causes as well. And you know, so I started thinking, okay, well, if it's kind of like a work group and it's kind of like a job, I thought, well, what would you call that job? You know, and my first articulation of that was, well, you're kind of the CEO, the thing that everybody knows needs to be done, but nobody's doing. And I thought to myself, well, not everybody's the CEO. And that's way too long of a title to ever fit on a book or anything. But then one day the title Champions of the Lost Causes came to me. And I thought to myself, that is it. Champions is a generic word, which could be anyone with any level of involvement championing a cause. And the minute I came up with that title, the very first blog post or probably chapter in my eventual book came to me. The lost causes aren't lost. The lost causes aren't lost because we found them. And that's the meaning behind the Compass logo that my friend Gil Wirth designed for the OAM podcast. Because we have to find our causes first, or I would argue in many ways, our causes find us. But then we also have to navigate from there, right? We like the Colosseum cause, there was a demolition order in place. Where do we go from there? Well, you got to build the plane and the runway all at the same time and get the plane in the air. All of that, you know, now I'm 31,000 words into a manuscript that's away with an editor for critical feedback. I have not yet quite exhausted the depths of it just yet. And when I say that, I mean, there are practical lessons learned from like what I've thought about this. And there's also kind of like the kind of like, you know, the psychology of it, you know, the meaning behind it. What drives people? What is it about human psychology? What motivates people to stay at it? And I find all that really, really interesting. The reason I decided to do a podcast was because I thought to myself, well, I am a champion championing a cause, but there are plenty of other causes and each cause is different. What might I learn by interviewing fellow champions of other lost causes? And the more I interview guests, the more I realize that that is a pretty broad framing. You know, you've got traditional business entrepreneurs that have a kind of meaning bent on the side. You know, like you could have just a regular plumbing business and you're like, the goal of the plumbing business is to make money and pay my bills. But you know, there is a, you're an entrepreneur, Mark, but you also are like, I'm going to do something novel and champion the cause of the print newspaper. And by doing so, I'm going to lift up certain causes that I don't think are getting the right type of attention. I'm going to give print attention to help digital outlets meet a different audience and serve different readers. That to me, like, you're a great hybrid example because you're both an entrepreneur and a champion of causes, and the mechanism also helps to lift up causes. So you're a kind of special case, really. But and I just found
that too.
Yeah, I found all that just kind of fascinating to kind of ruminate on. Yeah, and it's just like the writer side of me, that's the farther you get into management in public relations, the farther away you get from actual writing. And, you know, of course, it's been years since I've been a really active, you know, feature writer, reporter, and columnist in newspapers. But so reconnecting to my writer side has been a lot of fun too.
Yeah. I find personally, when it comes to causes, it's almost like there's kind of a twofold motivation for me. It's what needs are not being addressed is one. Yeah. And the other side for me sometimes is, what do I just love that I don't want to see go away? You know?
Right.
I mean, really, you know, I can't help but think, you know, you volunteer for WKNO during their pledge drives.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can just tell that you're very passionate about public radio. You can just tell, you know, from listening to talking about, you know, please call in and
it's a necessary voice. It's part of our public conversation and an informed, citizenry is really important. I'm a big fan of public broadcasting. So yeah, I get up early and go on with Rob Grayson and Amy McMillan twice a year, every year.
Yeah. No, it's I always get it's a joy to hear your voice, you know, come on, because I just know how passionate you are about it.
Oh, you're kind of saying that. Thanks.
You're doing the work that some of us would say, I want to do that too. I want to go in and But the thing is, it's
Oh, they'll put you to work, Mark.
Oh, they'll put. Oh, I can.
And now tell. That this is out here, expect the call.
Oh, I
can. Attention, Khaki Walton. We have a volunteer.
Hey, you know what? I don't mind at all. I would love to do it. It's the interesting part of it is, and this is something that all of us in the nonprofit world struggle with at times. And this came up during a conversation I had with all the community journalism panel discussion we did.
Mm-hmm.
I've only released parts of it, but one of the items that came up was we don't know how to ask for money as journalists. Mm. So it's interesting that you have the public relations background in addition to the journalism background, because traditionally journalists don't know, you know, aren't comfortable asking for money. You know, it's a whole different ballgame.
What's that old dividing line? The classic dividing line of editorial and advertising. Mm-hmm. Yes, you could say we're in the middle of a paradigm shift, and you know the whole native content and advertorial, you know, hybrid world that we're in now. Through the lens of somebody who, you know, was from the old school, they would be aghast, right? Like the old editor of the Commercial Appeal, Angus, what's his name, McGarren? Yeah.
That's a good long time, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember hearing stories of how advertising staffers were not allowed to get off on the editorial floors. You know, mm-hmm. like were not allowed to fraternize with the editorial side. And so you've got this, you still got the vestige of that old sensitivity because you don't want journalistic ethics compromised by money. And so how do you both do that and then responsibly also realize that journalism is becoming a donor supported, partially at least, enterprise? I mean, look at the NPR model. I would argue that's a fantastic example. And now, you know, the Daily Memphian is doing a similar thing. So
yeah,
Whitney Thomas with MLK 50 is doing a similar thing. So like, this is another kind of new thing that humanity is walking through. It's not a pandemic, but it's a new reality that you're having to adjust to, because print newspapers, the old model of selling print ads, broke down. You know, like that doesn't work anymore. So how do you support the need for unbiased finders of fact informing the citizenry? Like, that's a necessary thing in a democracy. So how do you support that? Well, we're finding our way, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Going back to the two classes for just a second, we're just about out of time, and I want to make sure we talk about that. You know, your experience in this world and drawing on your experience post Katrina, what do you think are nonprofit, media communications, what do you think it looks like? How is it going to have to change? Does it have to change?
I think it has. I think it has changed already, because in the same way earlier in the show that I described how St. Jude took a step back and said, what should we do? And then what should we put out there? What should we communicate about? What's most helpful to the world? I think every nonprofit has had to ask themselves that same question. And that's different if you're a provider of direct services. If you're church health, I gotta believe their hand is strengthened, in fact, because they really literally are on the front lines.
Right.
But if you're raising money for the symphony, especially, like, how does your fundraising message, how will it be perceived if people are consuming media where they're having to realize that the death count is climbing? It would come across as tone deaf and insensitive early on, especially.
Right.
If you're out there like, support our gala fundraiser. Like, events were like all of a sudden totally called in question. So many events like canceled. And that's done a lot of, that's a hard hit that our nonprofit sector has taken. I'm glad to say that I've seen evidence of that, that the donor public is realizing the ongoing need for nonprofits in Memphis and have stepped up to say, look, we're going to get through this. Philanthropists of Memphis have the nonprofit sector's backs. Because on the other side of it, most, I would probably argue, perhaps not all, you know, like some nonprofits will probably fail in this, or they'll have to dramatically reorient what they do. But
yeah,
and that's something I hope to learn more about. But absolutely, they have to think, how is our message relevant in this new context? I'd say that there's been some shift, and that parallels with the media appetite landscape. You know, like at first, a lot of reporters were telling me, Marvin, I'm really, you know, in any normal circumstance, I'd be really interested in your St. Jude Cloud genomics platform and what you're doing in terms of mapping the genome. That's all great. But just know that right now all that's tabled, and I have to have a COVID connection or my editor is not going to green light the piece. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that I had to react and say, even really interesting, noteworthy things that St. Jude is doing, we have to pause those messages for a second because they're just not going to land anywhere.
Yeah.
Similarly, those fundraising messages, they just have to recalibrate their sensitivity. And that's going to be different for every nonprofit. I mean, I think I've been doing some listening and attending some webinars myself to kind of get a broader sense and reading everything I can. And I hope to bring all that and my personal experience to bear in these classes. But make no mistake, I will learn from my colleagues in the broader Memphis PR community, for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. The classes, again, to repeat, Publicity 101, Pandemic and Beyond. We have it up on the storyboardmemphis.org website.
Yeah.
May 19th and 26th. And also, you can find them over at Momentum Partners. That's MomentumNonprofitPartners.org.
Yep.
And I'll post this along with the podcast. But I'm going to be attending.
Oh, great! They're free. They're free. I will say this: I just got an update. They are filling up. I think they're going to cap them at 50 participants. In each class. They're not sequential. You don't have to go to the first one to go to the second one. They're both freestanding. That said, I think different topics and will come up in each. So if you want to attend them both, I think there you'd probably get value out of both, but you don't have to go to the first one to be able to go to the second one. They're both free, but I would just recommend that if you're interested to go ahead and sign up soon.
Yeah,
your place, because I think they will fill up.
Yeah, thank you for that, because I don't want to miss that either.
Yeah.
Well, Marvin, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure, Mark.
Thank you so much for coming on the show once again. This will be airing Sunday night. So Marvin Stockwell, Director of Media Relations at St. Jude, and also part of the Coliseum Coalition, volunteer at WKNO, host of Champions of the Lost Causes, and on and on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mark, for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thanks, as always, to producer Vance Durbin and to WYPL broadcast manager Tommy Warren, to WYPL and the Memphis Public Libraries for their support, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. This has been your host, Mark Fleischer. We hope you join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with those Memphis personalities and shapers who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week and make it a safe week.